How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by Harrison Fagan. We're on take number two. We started the first one.
Yeah, somebody forgot to plug the mic in. I'm not going to name names, but...
It was Callie.
Production assistant.
Who is not very good at her job. She's not vocal enough. She doesn't talk. Like, she should have made it known that there was no red light going on. Anywho, Harrison is in my house. We are talking about the Lakers. We have a few things to hit today. First, Jordan Clarkson trade rumors. Then we're going to have a conversation with Jonathan Charks about the draft. Then we're going to talk about Jerry West on the other side of that conversation and his desire to be with the Lakers and the stuff that might be going on there. And then finally, Timofey Mozgov remains really honest, but almost to a fault. So let's start with this Jordan Clarkson stuff. And before we get to that, make sure you're following the show on Audioboom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and today's Fast Break. Today's show is brought to you by ZipRecruiter.com. That's ZipRecruiter.com/LOLakers to try ZipRecruiter for free. More on that here in a bit. But regarding this Jordan Clarkson stuff, there are some reports out there that the Lakers are becoming increasingly open to trading Jordan Clarkson. So the few questions that you have to ask there are, one, well, first and foremost, how do you feel about the rumors themselves? Two, should the Lakers be looking to do this? And three, if so, like what his trade value might actually be?
Yeah.
Right? And so I guess I'll start with the reporting and stuff. I'm not going to call anybody's reporting out. I'm not going to go there. But I do know how hard it has become to become plugged into the Lakers organization. And because of that, I'm waiting to really take this stuff seriously until I hear it from a Brez, until I hear it from a Medina, Ramona. Yeah, like it's really hard to crack the Lakers organization. And I mean, hell, I did it once. And
even if it's not, it does give us an excuse to talk about this, yeah, because this is a real thing that the Lakers, I mean, even if it wasn't out there, this is a real thing that the Lakers mm-hmm. should potentially be considering, or they should at least be evaluating whether or not they want to do this. Mm-hmm. And so I guess you got into this a little bit, but first we kind of have to ask where Clarkson's value is. Now, his contract's not that bad. $12 million a year on the under the current cap is okay for what he did last year. But then you have to ask, is his stock going to get higher? And I think that there's absolutely a chance that he comes in next year in a defined role off of the bench and without Lou Williams there to kind of take possessions. And Lou Williams was good, but it just kind of made Clarkson's role more inconsistent. And Clarkson comes in this year, if the Lakers, as they're expected to do, draft Lonzo Ball. And Clarkson comes in, he's the sole sixth man off the bench, he's the hub of the offense, and maybe that's freeing. He finally has a role, he knows what his job is, and he comes in and he just does it, and he kills it, and maybe his value is a little bit higher by the time the trade deadline
rolls
around.
Do you think he's capable of that role?
I think he's capable of it. I think there's a chance that that happens, but I also think that the other thing that you have to worry about is his stock dropping, because if he comes back and he does the same thing that he did this past year, and he's a year older to boot, then that's when teams start to go, okay, we know what this guy is, we know what to expect from him.
I would agree. I think, if I had a bet one way or the other, I think his stock goes up more likely than
I'm with you.
It goes down. And you know, injuries are also a factor here, but he's been very healthy over the extent of his NBA career. He also, to me, strikes me as somebody who is willing to put in the work to continue to get better. I think that's important to factor in here, too.
He already mastered putting a fidget spinner on his head and making it work this offseason. So there's really nothing that he can't master, I don't think.
So the last thing here is, do the Lakers, like, is there a desire or a necessity to move him now versus at the deadline? And if you and I are both in agreement that he is more likely to improve his draft status or his trade value right now than have it decline, then I think the Lakers can remain patient. There's no need to move him right now. I mean, I guess...
Are we being homers, though? Do we believe in Jordan Clarkson more than other people believe in Jordan Clarkson?
Yeah, but like if you get into that, then you're saying, well, would the other person on the other end of the line be you know, are they being a homer? Yeah. I think you try to value these guys as fairly as you can. And like if you're the Lakers and you're saying, all right, well, if there's a scenario where we could turn Jordan Clarkson, a prior 46th pick, into a first rounder, then you really have to kick the tires on that deal, right? And I'm not I'm not saying that that's what's out there or whatever.
I think it would be tough, maybe a late first rounder, but I think it would be tough to pry a first rounder for him.
Could you move Jordan Clarkson and Timofey Mozgov and get Mozgov's deal off of here? Or dang.
I think it would depend on the team, to be honest. I don't know that there are a ton of teams lining up to do that. The one team that I could see maybe considering just because they're so starved for young talent is obviously the Golden State Warriors. I'm just kidding. It's Brooklyn.
Yeah.
It's the Nets because they just don't have a whole lot. And so I could see them being a team that could potentially, that would consider that deal. But I just think that they'd have better options to use their cap space if that was the case.
And I think, once you get into, like, those are the reason I asked about those deals specifically is because that's how you gauge his market value. Yeah. Like that's how you gauge
out if they're fits.
Yeah, you try to figure out, all right, is there a team out there who'd be willing to make that kind of move? And if not, then you say, all right, well, what else would I? Are you okay with moving the 28th pick Clarkson and Mozgov to get him up? You know, to get Mozgov's deal. And that's where it becomes really complicated. And you know, if you're the Lakers, I think it's kind of hard to figure like day by day what somebody's willingness to move somebody is, you know, like is there a chance we might get a report next week? Because we keep on getting conflicting reports about the Lakers' willingness to draft Lonzo. Are we going to get a report next week saying, no, we definitely aren't.
Clarkson's untouchable.
Yeah. Can't move him.
Yeah.
You know, so it's that time of the year right now. And I think reporting on this stuff is tough. And I just don't see it quite yet with Clarkson. There's no need for me to move him right now.
So you don't feel like there's any need to, I think that's the bigger question. Do you feel like there is any need to move it?
I
think we're kind of in agreement on that they don't have to move him. But I think that what we do have to acknowledge is we were higher on Clarkson going into last season than he ended up being. And so there's a chance that we're making that error again. And I think what we all thought last year was, and the last 2 years really, was Clarkson and D'Angelo Russell can be a nice backcourt complement to each other for years to come. And I think a lot of us honestly believe that that could be something that worked out. And I think we know after this season that that just isn't really the case.
Yeah, I would happen to agree, although with the slight caveat in there, that we never got, I don't think, a full look at it. I don't think we saw
enough. We got an extended look down the stretch. I kind of 12 games. Yeah, and they were okay. I just don't think that that's ever going to be your starting backcourt on a really good team.
No, that's for sure.
There's too much overlap. There are too many kind of flaws. It's just not a symbiotic partnership.
So I think it's something to monitor moving forward. It's something to kind of store in the back of your mind. But as of right now, I don't think there's enough to run with there to really believe the rumor. Quick break here to talk about ZipRecruiter.com. Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites, and now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 100 plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface.
And it's kind of crazy. We've almost went this whole live read without you threatening my job. This is amazing.
Oh, that was coming next.
Oh.
I don't have to juggle emails or calls to my phone. I can quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast, whoever you might be out there. Find out why ZipRecruiter has been used by Fortune 100 companies and thousands of small and medium-sized businesses. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on... That's right. My listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/LOLakers. That's ZipRecruiter.com/LOLakers. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/LOLakers.
So did you use the LO Lakers promo code or the ZipRecruiter.com/LOLakers to search for a new co-host for LO Lakers?
Oh yeah, I was all over that head. Like,
well, I'm glad that I've at least in my time with the show, I guess, like I'm departing. I guess I've at least taught you to manage a budget well. So that's good. You're making smart decisions with how to hire my co-host. And I guess it's like last time. We're going into an interview. I guess I'd feel really worried if I was not in the interview. That's where I start to get really worried about.
Yeah, there's no reason whatsoever why you wouldn't be included in this interview. There's 100% absolute guarantee you're in this one.
All right, let's talk to Sharks.
All right, we're joined now by Jonathan Sharks. I also let Harrison in on this call too. He was rather pushy about being on this one too, but Jonathan, thank you very much for joining us. It's early-ish on a Thursday morning. We're going to talk about the NBA draft. You've been spending a lot of time, you know, looking up, you know, who could rise and fall and all that exciting stuff. But like I said, thanks first and foremost for joining us.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, so we'll start here. All Lakers draft coverage tends to have to start with Lonzo Ball. It's kind of funny, the Lakers and whoever is behind the scenes, working behind the scenes, is doing whatever they can to make it look like the Lakers are doing their due diligence by saying, I think yesterday the quote was, Lonzo has to, you know, really ball out.
Blow the doors off his workout.
Yeah, and I just find that funny because Magic went so far as to say that he sees himself in the mirror when he sees Lonzo Ball, and that's not something you say about somebody who you wouldn't be ready to draft if they're available for you. But what are your thoughts on Lonzo Ball's fit with the Lakers storyline not included?
Yeah, I don't know how much Magic – I feel like he's an overpraiser. Like, he loves everyone all the time, which is great. I mean, I'm sure it's a good way to live your life, but I don't know, you know.
I just, like, imagine cooking Magic a meal, and this is the greatest steak ever.
Magic's like that guy who's always on movie reviews. It's like, the best movie ever, or whatever. It's like, it's a guy from, like, Fox TV. That's always the same guy.
Yeah, he's quoted in like every single trailer. I know who you're talking about. I forget the name.
Yeah, it's a great gig. I wish I had that gig.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that gig either. But so, Magic effusive praise notwithstanding, do you think Lonzo Ball and D'Angelo Russell could figure it out?
I think offensively for sure. I just wonder about defensively. That to me is like the number one issue with playing those two together. I mean, I think they'd be really big guards, and you'd probably have a great offense, but then it just comes down to, do you have enough defensive personnel around them? Who's going to guard like your fast ones? Who's going to guard Eric Bledsoe on that? Out of those two guys, I don't think either one of them has much of a chance of doing that. So I don't know. Like, it just depends how much you value that, I guess, because they both be really good NBA players. But man, that's a tough cover for whoever has to guard point guards out of those two.
Is it fair to say though, at this stage in the basketball, the evolution of basketball, that, you know, individual defense like that can be kind of overrated?
I mean, yes and no. Because, yeah, like, there'll be a lot of screens, but plenty of guys still get ISOs. I mean, actually in the playoffs. Like, look at Kyrie. Mm-hmm. Like, theoretically, if you're playing Kyrie in a series, I don't know if you'd want to have Lonzo or D'Angelo getting that cover. Kyrie's going to get, like, 30 a night, maybe. I mean, it's still important. That's all I'm saying. And you definitely want to have defensive bigs, too. And that goes back to having Julius as your four and Mozgov as your five. That's pretty not – it's not a very ideal scenario defensively.
Oh, we watched. It was not great last year. On the offensive side of the ball, though, because a lot of talk surrounding Lonzo and surrounding D'Angelo Russell, especially Russell in his first couple of years here, has been like he's not a true point guard this. He doesn't facilitate enough that. He's better off ball. And he actually is. Like he's actually a really good spot-up shooter. But in terms of like this idea that the Lakers have to employ some natural point guard, would De'Aaron Fox make more sense maybe in that sense?
I could see it. Because I think with both D'Angelo and Lonzo, I think like it used – maybe a couple years ago it was like, okay, let's get the biggest, tallest point guard. But now I'm kind of in the mindset, like, if I have a big, tall point guard, the best way to use him is to play him as a two with another point guard. Like, I think that's the best way to use, like, that elite size as point guard, is to move him over and play him with the even smaller, faster guy. Then you could have a really great offense. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, I'm in Dallas, what the Mavs do a lot. They'll play two point guards at a time. But the problem is, their point guards are all really short, so you'll have like Devin Harris playing two or something, or Raymond Felton back in the day. But like, if you could have a 6'6 guy who can play one at the two, I think your offense can really be great. So and that's what I think. I feel like with both D'Angelo and Lonzo, in their ideal scenario, I'd want them playing as a two next to another ball handler, and like having, because they're both such great shooters and attacking closeouts. If you had another guy who could attack into the lane like De'Aaron and pass it out to like D'Angelo or Alonzo, I feel like that would be pretty great.
Mm-hmm.
So would you go as far as to say that the Lakers should go with De'Aaron Fox over Lonzo Ball because you like the fit better? Or where are you starting to lean as this draft starts to shake out? Or maybe is it like, do you like Josh Jackson there? I don't know.
It's tough. I think Lonzo's the better player of the group. I have him at two behind Mark. It's tough because I feel like Markel's by far the best. And then there's a big group, but I think Lonzo's the best of that group, and I could see a scenario where Lonzo becomes better than Markel. In terms of ceiling, I'd have a hard time passing on Lonzo. It just comes back to like the D'Angelo pick a couple years ago, and I guess it's, you can't relitigate that. To me, I'd have a hard time taking De'Aaron number two just based on that jumper. Like, there was a great article from Pelton a couple days ago talking about pull-up threes and how like the best point guards have pull-up threes now, and De'Aaron, theoretically, his jumper could get better. It's just, you get burned so many times with those kind of guys. He was like in the fifth percentile of jump shooters. Yeah, I don't know.
That's tough to draft the guy. Oh, yikes.
The idea of a lead ball handler, like the Celtics had this issue with Rajon Rondo there, and basically any team that's employed Rajon Rondo, if the guy who has the ball more than everybody else on your team can't shoot or won't shoot, that so severely hamstrings what you're trying to do on offense, because they could just, like, Kobe in the finals just flat out wouldn't guard Rondo. He would just back way off and say, do what you want, you know, and because he had the length, he would play center field while guarding the ball. It was crazy to watch.
I certainly wouldn't want to play De'Aaron and Julius in the same team, but I guess that's a different can of worms. I'd have a hard time taking De'Aaron number two, I'll put it that way.
So when we're talking about this fit with Russell thing, and I think kind of the elephant in the room is whether or not the Lakers are even going to end up keeping it. I like D'Angelo Russell. I still believe in D'Angelo Russell. But when we get people who don't kind of like watch the team as much as Anthony and I do, where we basically only watch the Lakers, whereas you kind of canvass the whole league. And I'm curious as to whether or not you still believe in D'Angelo Russell, because I think I remember you being pretty high on him coming into the draft a couple of years ago. Is that correct?
Yeah, I still believe in him. I mean, I think it's just, I wonder if the best fit is what I was talking about. It's like playing him, instead of playing him, I don't believe in him guarding point guards.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's pretty important. It's just tough, man. I feel like they're both ideally suited for that same spot in a lineup, but I think they're big enough to make it work. It's just, if you're going to go Ingram, D'Angelo, Lonzo, you really, really got to have good defensive bigs behind those guys. I think, I don't know. I mean, I would be curious to see what D'Angelo could get. I think ideally you'd move him, but he's probably not at his highest trade value right now. I can imagine.
It's been crazy to hear, like, when you know, people lob out on Twitter, would you trade
like the Kings, I think it was, would you trade the number 10 pick for Russell? Or I think in Dallas it was, because what number pick does Dallas have?
Nine.
Yeah, and it was the same kind of question. Would you trade the number 9 pick for Russell? And they were like, well, they better send 28 back over too. And I'm sitting here flabbergasted because I think Russell still has a higher ceiling than just about anybody. Like right now on Draft Express, the Dennis Smith is at 8, Lauri Markkanen is at 9, Zach Collins is at 10. Though you do like Lauri Markkanen, I saw that you see his ceiling is pretty high as a stretch 5.
I don't know. I mean, I think he's really good for what he is. I've got him at on the big board 11, I think.
Mm-hmm.
10. I mean, he's good. He's one of those guys, like, I think he'll be really good until he's, how do I say this? Like, he'll be a really good, like, he's like Ryan Anderson, kind of. He'll be really good in regular season and in a round of the playoffs. But at some point later in the playoffs, I don't know how that's going to guard anybody. Like, he's the best shooter in this draft. He's 7 feet tall. So he's, I think he's a pretty high floor just from that.
Yeah, I was pretty impressed by how his, because they have that stat that basically tries to predict how good a shooter these guys might be at the next level. And he rated the highest, and it was by
significantly.
Yeah, by a considerable margin. And I mean, based on, you know, what the Lakers need, like, I guess we should have started the conversation here. This is me being great at my job, but the Lakers, I think we need to figure out what the Lakers really need, right? And in my opinion, they need shooting and they need defense. In
just those two small issues that they need to address.
No biggie though.
Yeah.
And you know, for Lonzo, he helps with the shooting, but he probably won't help with the defense. And then, you know, maybe De'Aaron Fox helps with the defense, or Josh Jackson helps with the defense, but, you know, you have to hope they develop shots.
Actually, I would say with Lonzo, I think he could be a pretty good defensive too. He's 6'6". Uh-huh. He's pretty athletic. If he puts on some weight as he gets older, it's just tough because he was being forced to guard guys like De'Aaron Fox. That's just not going to be what he does in the NBA. That's just a tough thing. I'd probably just take Lonzo and D'Angelo and hope it works, but it's always there. Your little small guards will be a problem.
So I'm of the belief that at the top of the draft, you take the best player available. And then as you move, you know, into the late first and into the second round, you start thinking a little bit more about fit. Do you just stick with best player available throughout the draft? Do you think about draft at the top, fit at the top? How do you handle that?
Well, see, for me, it's almost like the reverse, uh-huh. Kind of. Like, I think at one, if you have a superstar, take the best player, obviously. Mm-hmm. But, like, when you get to the late first or early second, that's a time to just roll the dice and swing for the fences. Like, if you think a guy's undervalued, just take him. He has talent. Because at that point, fit in the late first, early second is pretty pointless anyways. Because most guys aren't even going to play. Yeah. So it's like, if you have a guy who might be good, you just take him. And at the top of the draft, it's just so important to build a good, cohesive core where, like, it's tough. There's, like, a spectrum. Like, Philly is the one end of the spectrum. You obviously can't do that. That's just crazy. And so it's just, like, how close do you go the other way? But you definitely got to build cohesive units of great players. Those are the best teams where everyone fits well together. So there's a constant. I think there's no hard and fast rule, I guess, is best to say. Each time is different. Each player is different. Especially the top of the draft. I will say the top of the draft aren't a hard and fast rules because every guy is so unique at that stage. And the smallest differences are huge. Whereas to me, at 28, I'm taking the best player I think is there.
Yeah.
I guess the natural segue from that is, who do you think is the best player there for that the Lakers should take right now? I see Draft Express has them taking Shimi Ogilvy as the best as the 28th best prospect, and then their mock has the Lakers taking Ivan Rabb of Cal, who they worked out earlier this week. But do you like either of those guys, or is there another guy that you think they should be looking at with 28?
Well, I mean, at 28, it's hard to say. Because there's no way to predict who's going to be there, really.
That's true.
Right? Like, I'm doing my little big board. The guys I have pretty high compared to most people, one is Juwan Evans. I think he's going to be really good in the NBA. He's like something like your classic, super fast point guard. He had like the number 2 offense in the country behind UCLA, maybe the number 1 offense. And he was the only NBA guy on it. He's a little short, but he's an elite pick and roll point guard. At 19 or 20, however old, 21, however old he is, He knows the read a pick and roll, pull up, get to the rim. He's crazy fast. He's from Dallas. I watched him play when he was younger. He's just a blur. He's got long arms, make up for his kind of lack of wingspan. I wouldn't be stunned if Evans is a starting point guard, even though he's only 5'11", 6 feet. I think he has to get better at shooting and finishing, but to me, he's got a lot of potential. And then there's a lot of good bigs there. I think there's a spot for a lot of good bigs. The guys I like at that spot are these kind of like stretch five-ish bigs who can block shots. So DJ Wilson in Michigan, Cameron Oliver at Nevada. And then I just started watching this guy today, Jonah Bolden, the UCLA guy. He got way better this year. He was dominant in the Adriatic League.
Evans actually sounds kind of like exactly the type of quick point guard that you were saying would be a good fit next to Russell or Ball.
I think so for sure. And he has 6'6 arms, so he's not going to be awful at defense, though he's still really short.
Well,
yeah, they have him listed 6'1.
I mean, like Tyler Ulis was somebody who people, you know, loved coming into the draft, and he was really small, and his defense and kind of tenacity made, like,
I wouldn't compare Evans. Ulis' defense at his size is unreal. Yeah. That's just kind of like an outlier.
It was funny to watch him. I was watching some random, because I think it was like a tank kind of situation where I was just kind of watching and pulling for the Suns to win. And I was watching him guard, who was it? I forget who it was, but it was a pretty good guard, and it was amazing to watch him just give that guy fits just all over the court, and it was crazy to watch that it's for somebody so small, right? Like he's not much taller than, or if he's taller at all than Isaiah Thomas, right? He's maybe an inch or two.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe. He's really short.
Yeah, but to go back to the fit and whatever thing. I guess, like, for the Lakers, again, I'm on the Ringer one, and it has Jordan Bell at 28.
I like him a lot, too. He's the other guy who could be really good as a small five.
And the issue there, though, is that, like, the Lakers have Mozgov, they have Randall, they have Nance, they have Deng, who probably should play the four, they have Tarik Black in theory. Thomas Robinson is an option, is like a cheaper Tarik Black if they feel like going that route. They're so crowded in the front court that for me, I think whoever they draft, if they draft in the front court there, would have their work cut out for them to play at all, even, you know, if they come in and show out in training camp or whatever. Whereas, like, if they do go with Juwan Evans, who, you know, maybe, I don't know how you feel about Juwan versus Jordan Bell in terms of ceilings. But at least there, Juwan Evans has a path to make an impact on the Lakers, whereas I think it's a little tougher for Bell or any big that they look at there because of how crowded that front court is.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a problem all around the league, really, mm-hmm. just these crowded front courts. And I think, like, my biggest thing with a lot of these mocks, you see, like, 7 or 8 centers in the back half of the first. Like, how are these guys ever going to play?
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there's some good wings. I think, like, another guy, Frank Jackson, I mean, there's some good players at 28. And then, like, I like the wings in this draft. I like, you know, Josh Hart's pretty good. Devin Robinson's a crazy athletic. I like Wesley Iwundu probably the best. He's from Kansas State. 7'1 wingspan. There's a lot of options you can go there. I think 28, actually, if they got Nance last time, like, I'd be very excited for 28 if you can hit that pick. There's a good player there if you can find him, for sure.
I think this kind of goes back to the Lakers' intentions going into this draft overall, right? Like, how do you feel about the Lakers' core? Because I go back and forth on this all the time. Some days, you know, some days I wake up and I say, holy crap, if Russell figures it out and Ingram gains a little bit of weight and Nance is ever willing to shoot an outside shot and Zubats, you know, becomes, you know, a low post scorer that you can just kind of stick in there, like, in his canner. Like, that's a really fun young core. But then there are other days where it's like, well, Russell is really slow. Ingram, you know, his shooting last year was pretty deterrent of thinking that he could be an elite small forward. And then Zubats, I don't know if the game has passed that kind of guy up. How do you feel about the Lakers' young core moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think Zubats is really skilled. I think, like, there's value to have a guy like that off your bench for sure. Mm-hmm. He probably could have been a starter like 15, 20 years ago, but he's born a little too late. To me, like, the first question is Randall. I'm just curious, like, what do y'all think about that? How much is he going to make in the offseason? How much money is he going to get?
I don't think they're going to – I mean, I would – I don't think they're going to do the extension this year because they're trying to maintain as much flexibility as they can moving into next year. Like, Paul George is still – it still feels like that's their number one target here. Somehow, even more importantly than whatever they do in this upcoming offseason, which – you know, you put all your eggs in one basket, it can kind of make you nervous a little bit. But, like, with Randall, I think they wanted to see... They're probably really happy to see the way he became, like, the world's most cut power forward in the span of, like...
In, like, 3 weeks.
In less than a month, he became, like, Rocky. But I think for him, they want to dangle that carrot with him because him... inspired, like his problem has always been, can you be consistently focused enough to play really hard game in, game out? Like, it's always effort with him, and if they pay him now, I think they might be concerned that he won't play as hard as you need to get a return on that investment.
And then the other variable here that I hate to bring up again, but is that Randall shares an agent with George and Russell. And so I don't know. I don't know if that throws a wrench into things and how much they're going to pay him, or if they're going to maybe if they end up paying him more next summer after they've brought in George, like there's some type of wink, wink type thing going on. I mean, I don't know. I just think that throws another variable into how much they pay Randall or how motivated they are to keep him around and happy.
I mean, it's definitely a thing, like agent stuff. We never really talk about it, but it's a big thing for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, how was he defensively this year? I didn't watch as much as y'all did, the Lakers.
It's funny.
He was okay at the start of the year switching, and then I think teams started to figure out that they could just back him up to the rim and score there.
It's also funny with him because, again, it's just you watch him. If you watch him at the very beginning of a possession, and if he's like standing up or, you know, he's flat-footed or whatever, you know, like that possession isn't going to end well if he's involved at all. But if he is focused, if he gets back and he gets into position, he's up on the balls of his feet, he has his hands out, and he's just his head's on a swivel, then you know, all right, yeah, this might, if he's involved in this, you know, he could get a rebound, he can get his hand on a loose ball or something. It's just about focus with him. And I think he's, you know, his wingspan is always going to be an issue for him. I think they're really focused on getting him stronger to kind of make up for that, so that, you know, he could kind of force the contact onto a player versus, you know, try to react utilizing the traditional wingspan technique. But with him, it was so frustrating to watch because it's like, well, this isn't going to go well as soon as the ball crossed half court.
Yeah, it's tough. It's like, and mine's kind of like with Blake. You have to be so sound positionally when you're not very long. Like, you can't cut any corners if you don't have the length to make up for mistakes you make. It's just really – and that's my thing with Lakers' core. Plus, they draft Lonzo at two. Is like, you've got to have defensive guys up front to be even good, decent. And I just don't know if they have them right now. And that'd be – I don't know if you find them in free agency or later in the draft or what, but you just got to figure out a way to get – if you're going to go Lonzo, D'Angelo, Brandon, you've just got to get guys who can guard behind them. You just have to.
They – that's where Nance kind of comes into this whole thing, because if Lonzo gets drafted, he's a ball handler, he's a creative guy, Russell's a creative guy, Ingram brought the ball up the court at times last year, you don't need necessarily a fourth guy to create shots for everybody else. When that player can't make shots themselves from the outside and is a hindrance on defense, that's why Nance is more athletic, he's a little bit longer, and frankly he has a better mind for the game on the defensive end of things. And you know, that's where I think sometimes Randall is the better player, but Nance fits better with that core. So either Randall gets pushed to the bench and becomes kind of like a super six man to handle the creativity with the second unit, or he just gets moved, you know. And I think the second scenario there is as likely as anything.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. I think you're exactly right. If you draft Lonzo, Julius really doesn't have much purpose because he can't spread the floor for them and he's not going to guard for him. Mm-hmm. He needs the ball in his hands. It doesn't really make – it's not a great use of the five spots you got on the floor. So, yeah, it does seem like if Lonzo's there, Julius is probably out the door.
Yeah, in some way, you know, and it's I think it's kind of tough because people who are listening to this, because I've been a little lower on Randall historically, so people listening to this is up. Here goes Anthony, and he's trading Randall, but it's fit. The fit there doesn't really make much sense. Do you think the Lakers will? And this is Jonathan Sharks again of the Ringer. He does great work all around the league, but especially in terms of the draft. Do you think the Lakers will, he being Magic and he being Rob Pelinka / Lowe, do you think they will trade that 28th pick to create more room for the summer of 2018 or bringing in a veteran or whatever? Do you think they actually use that pick?
I mean, I'm not really plugged into what their thought process is. I don't know. I would hope they keep it. At the very least, you could draft the Euro and stash him. Like, you could take Bolden, play him in Europe, or if Currix falls that low, I mean, or someone else. I think, like, the value you can get from it is way higher, potentially, than clearing, what, $1.5 million in cap space? That to me doesn't make a ton of sense if you can just stash a guy, worst case scenario. Well, but, I mean, I don't know what they're going
to
do.
Well, I guess, like, if it's to move Deng or if it's to move Mozgov, do you think that...
That would make sense. But is that enough to...
Yeah, that's
28's pretty... To take a contract like
yeah,
that...
Yeah, I'm not tough. Sure that's enough.
Like, I bet Portland moves, like, 21 to or 20. I bet that pick gets moved to take out, like... Turner. Could you move Evan Turner for 20? I don't know. But I bet... Like, Portland's going to move one of their picks for sure to clear some cap space, I would think. The Mavs probably will take... They're a team that would take guys for picks. But 28's pretty low to take a big contract.
Yeah, I could see the Nets doing that, too.
Definitely the Nets would do that, for sure.
I wonder also, like, if the Lakers... Because there's now rumors kind of swirling about Magic being willing to move Jordan Clarkson. And I believe the Nets are so far under the cap that they could, in theory, take on, you know, Clarkson and Deng and that 28th pick. But that's a lot to just get rid of a contract, right? Although, I guess, technically speaking, Clarkson also frees up some of the financials behind that too. But just in general, you still think though that it's probably you're best suited taking somebody there. And I mean I especially like if they could wind up with Juwan Evans at 30, I think he might be able to present more value there than even potentially moving Deng because of or Mozgov because of the backflips you'd have to do financially to do that.
Well, I just think also with moving money, You can always move money when you need to. I don't really see a huge point in moving money ahead of time, right? Like that's how you get what the Kings did a couple of years ago when they moved all that money to sign Rondo and who did they sign? I forget. Kufus. Like when the Warriors signed Iguodala, they had the deal done, then they moved the money. There's enough cap space out there that if you make a deal, there's always time to flip the money later. I wouldn't preemptively flip money because then it's just, what's the point until you have something you want to do with it?
Yeah, and then if what you're flipping that money for falls through, then you just gave up assets to
for nothing.
Money. Yeah, to yeah.
Didn't the Rockets, didn't how you have this pick? Wasn't this for the Rockets pick when they wanted to get Chris Bosh? I think, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they
that's
moved.
That's how this pick happened.
They moved Lynn and their pick.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, you don't move it until you have it, so you got locked in, I feel like.
Yeah, I would agree. So, all right. So to put a cherry on this thing, who are you taking at the very? Who are you taking it to? And then, I mean, 28 is such a crapshoot. I don't even think it's worth discussing there. But if you were Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka, and you had on draft night, you had to make that call. Who would you take?
I'd probably take Lonzo at 2. For no reason, I feel like the difference between him, I think he's the best of that second tier. And even if I thought someone else was a slightly better fit, I don't know if I want to draft. Because, like, you're going to use so much of your capital as a front office to not take Lonzo there. Like, you better be freaking sure the guy you take instead of him is the right guy. And to me, none of the guys are, like, for sure the right. If I was for sure there was a better fit, I would take him. But I think it's close enough where I would just go with Lonzo, save myself some heartache. Also, too, like with the front office, a lot of it, you got to cover yourself, man. You can't be out there just like taking Anthony Bennett 1. Mm-hmm. Chris Grant doesn't have a job. Like, when you got to take measured risks. You can't just do things, you know, in a perfect ideal world.
It was funny for, I would say, a full year or so, the prior front office was taking crap for not taking Jahlil Okafor. And just imagine how that would be compounded, how the response to that would be if they passed on Lonzo Ball. Like, that was Jahlil Okafor. If they pass on Lonzo Ball with everything that's kind of going on in terms of how he could be sold to this fan base, that they might riot if, like, say, they take Josh Jackson and he doesn't work out. Like, they Laker fans won't handle that very well, even if it's Magic Johnson making that pick.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, if you do it, you better be right. I think, to me, like, Lonzo is better than those guys. So, I mean, I would just do it. And just, I think they can make it work. Like, at the very least, if you have Lonzo, D'Angelo, and Ingram, I think you'll have one of the best offenses in the league. And you can find defensive guys, hopefully, down the road.
Yeah, I would happen to agree. Well, thank you very much, Jonathan, for making time for us. We greatly, greatly appreciate it. Anything that you're working on coming down the pike up there at the Ringer?
We have our little Ringer NBA draft guide. It's a lot of stuff, a lot of good hashtag content there. And then, you know, NBA playoffs, NBA finals coverage. I'm about to take a nap so I can get ready for this game tonight.
Yeah, I can't wait. Who do you got? Who are you taking?
I mean, I'm going to take the Warriors.
Yeah? Do you think it's – because it tends to me to be like the analytical thinkers on Twitter are thinking Warriors and quickly. I'm of the dumber type, so like I'm thinking Warriors, but maybe a little bit longer. How do you think it's? Do you think the Warriors just run through them?
It's possible. I don't know that. The thing with Golden State, I think are they going to bench Zaza right away or stuff like that? If they optimize their rotation, I think it'll take a little time to shake out. I'm saying Warriors in six.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Well, again, so the draft guide that he was talking about, that Jonathan was talking about, is nbadraft.theringer.com. That's Jonathan Sharks. Thank you very much for joining us, Jonathan, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Have a good one, guys.
Hi, you've reached the High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my family's going to a tailgate, and I want our style to stand out from the crowd.
Just go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, Old Navy's got all the latest fall styles. Plus, during Old Navy's colossal sale, you'll save up to 50% off store-wide.
Did you say up to 50% off?
I did, so don't sit on the sidelines. Old Navy has the perfect pants from $19, stylish dresses from $15, and comfy tees for the family from just $6 right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com.
We're cheering for Old Navy.
High Fashion, Old Navy. Valid 10-2 to 10-10. Select styles only.
All right. Hey, you were in the interview.
Yeah, that's it feels good to be back for one. I'm not going to lie. That was a fun conversation, and it was cool to learn about the draft like while we were doing the interview instead of later when I'm editing the podcast. Well, I would have had to listen to it, but it was nice to talk to Jonathan, and it was nice to get a little bit more knowledge for two draft idiots like us, because that's what we have to do. We are not like – people are asking me, they're like, what's your big boy? What's your top – what's your top 30 look like? And I'm like, I don't know. What?
Top
30? Who are the Lakers going to take with 28? I'm like, I don't know.
I have a top 3.
That's literally the sound I make. I actually type that out. It's like,
just ours. But so a couple quick things regarding the Charks interview.
Sure.
I think it's really interesting. So Charks to me doesn't seem a victim to narrative.
No.
He's a very analytical guy. He's a very smart guy.
That's why I followed him. That's why I started following him initially.
He's like, you guys are spirit animals. Like, that's...
Yeah. He's like if he's I like became a draft hero. Analyst.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think him saying that Lonzo Ball is, A, the second best player behind Markelle Fultz, and there's a bit of a gap between him and the other guys immediately behind him, I think that's very noteworthy.
Yeah.
I think the other thing, you know, the fit thing with the Lakers, I completely agree with him. I mean, Pete and I talked at length about the fit offensively. Defensively, they're still going to have some issues.
I don't think there's anybody that just is saying that they're going to be a strong defensive backcourt. Yeah. Maybe they can be an adequate one.
That's what you're hoping for.
Yeah, you're hoping for competence.
Yeah, you're hoping for elite offensive production and competence.
And that wasn't so hurtful on defense.
Yeah, so I think that was the noteworthy thing there. I liked what he was talking about regarding the point guard that he was mentioning, whose name I already forgot.
To be fair to Anthony, we're recording this like 6 hours after the original Chark's interview.
But I do like what he was saying, and I agree with him.
As far as grabbing a speedy point guard.
Needing a quote-unquote true point guard, and that's something else that Pete and I talked about.
I don't
think
he ever said true. Don't put that, Eva. He didn't say true point guard. That's you using your most hated phrase.
So I thought Sharks gave us a lot of great information. I hope everybody enjoyed that. And you were a part of the interview. So yeah. That was,
and if you enjoyed that, or if you enjoy our show in general, please don't hesitate to give us a rating on iTunes, preferably 5 stars. That really helps us out. It helps out all podcasters. But, well, you know, we hope you love us and you choose to use like 30 seconds to go ahead and do that for us.
Tell us who you think the Lakers should draft at the 28th spot.
Yeah.
We all know, I think Lonzo Ball is kind of the de facto pick.
Yeah, I think everybody expects him at number two.
Or if you don't think it's Lonzo, tell us why. If we get a good quality take about why Lonzo Ball should not be the Lakers' second overall pick in our reviews, I will read that. I promise I will read that. I will shout you out. I'll follow you on Twitter even. Why not?
Yeah, tweet Anthony a screenshot of your review.
And I'll follow him. All right, so...
We should get into, you want to talk about Jerry West first?
We'll talk about Jerry West first. Let's talk
about Jerry West first.
So right now, Silver Screen and Rolls mentions have been kind of in shambles because we now have 2 stories up about
Jerry. For once, it's not because of an Anthony tweet.
Yeah, you don't bring that evil on me.
Yeah, it wasn't his fault this time. And it wasn't about Jerry West versus Ronnie Price. We aren't going to explain that. That's a special joke for long time listeners.
Almost as long as Jerry West has been. No, I'm just kidding. So Jerry West wants to be working with the Lakers.
He made that pretty clear at this point.
Yeah.
I think in the interview with Dan Patrick from this morning, Mark Medina transcribed the quotes. We threw that up on silverscreenandroll.com. I kind of talked about it a little bit. It's pretty clear that Jerry West would very much have liked to have finished his career with the Lakers, but I think that ship has sailed.
Yes, and I think it's sailed for 2 reasons. One, he isn't, from what I've heard, he isn't the greatest person to work with behind the scenes.
And I think that from publicly available information, that's kind of easy to glean. If you read his book, you know he's incredibly demanding of both himself and others, and that he's dealt with like some mental health issues. He's been an advocate for that. And I think the other thing that you have to take into context here is that Jerry West, part of the reason he left the first time was because he was uncomfortable with Phil Jackson dating Jeannie Buss. And everybody, the response to that has been, oh, well, they're not dating anymore, so it's all good. And it's like, really? You really think that she was just cool with this guy, like, quitting and, like, blaming it on her? And, like, you know, that's, like, personal stuff. I can't even, like, blame her if she was offended by that. And we don't know for a fact that she was, but, you know, if she was... Then, yeah, I mean...
That's the human element of this
stuff. That's the kind of human stuff that you have to take into account. And that's even with saying, maybe she should be able to put that aside. I don't know. I don't know how bad the blood is there. But Jerry West, by all accounts, is, like, one of the best... one of the most successful executives.
Oh, yeah, in terms of results, he's
building Showtime, and then turning right around after, like, barely a lull, and turning right around... And building the Shaq and Kobe Lakers, like, that's a hell of a turnaround. Helping rebuild the Grizzlies, which is something most people thought was impossible.
How many teams could deal with the loss of a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar to retirement, and then the loss of Magic Johnson, damn near his prime?
Yeah,
it just
so like out retirement. Of the blue, like not even an injury, just
The Miami Marlins right now are dealing with the loss of Jose Fernandez, their pitcher. I don't know if you know his backstory, but. They are reeling. They continue to reel from that loss. And that's in a sport where individual impact is nowhere near the same as in basketball. Yeah. And the Lakers they hit the ground running right immediately.
We're the sign Shaq. That's fine.
Yeah. And so
trade for Vlade Divac for Kobe.
So that and so this is all important context for why there are people rightfully upset that the Lakers let Jerry West go. I think multiple things can be true here. It can be a risk.
Or just didn't choose to bring him back.
Yeah, it can be a risk that they chose to go in a different direction from Jerry West.
And we can understand the context behind that.
It can also
decision.
Be true that it was a fair risk to take, that they wanted to move forward. And
I can't really, with as big of a personality as he is and as big of a cult of personality as he has created behind him, there is a cult of Jerry West among Lakers fans, and rightfully so. But if you're bringing that guy in, then all of a sudden you aren't getting the chance to establish your voice, or it's harder for you to establish your voice and then set the narratives that you want to set and build the type of team that you want to build.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and I mean, I guess you both probably would want to build successful teams, but it's just harder to establish yourself as a new executive, which both Magic and Rob Pelinka are, when you have somebody that big kind of sitting over your shoulder. And hey, the Warriors did it. Mm-hmm. The Warriors did it. They brought in Bob Myers, and part of the reason that they brought in Jerry West was because Bob Myers was an agent. So this situation that Rob Pelinka is in has literally been done to great mm-hmm. success in Golden State. But I think there is personality context here. And that
the other regarding the Golden State thing, because I've seen that quite a bit on Twitter, that the model is there, right? The people are saying the model is there for how this can work, but that model is also reliant on Steph Curry's ankles being paper mache in the first few years of his contract, signing a really cheap contract, also experiencing a salary cap hike that would allow you to sign somebody like Kevin Durant. Like, these things, as much as the Warriors want to pat themselves on the back for this light years thing that they keep on talking about,
their owner wants to pat himself on the back.
There's a lot of luck involved there.
Yeah, and I think everybody except for their owner involved in building the team would probably admit that.
The reason I say
but
that is,
it did. Jerry West was reportedly one of the guys that was behind not trading Klay Thompson and possibly Draymond Green for Kevin Love to mm-hmm. the Timberwolves, and they kind of got lambasted for that. Time everybody was like, oh, Kevin Love, he's a double-double god, why do you not want a guy like that?
Can I play devil's advocate?
That took balls to not do that.
Can I play devil's advocate really quick?
Sure, it's your podcast.
For somebody as great as Jerry West is,
yeah,
that's a nice little stat, but for somebody as great as we all know Jerry West to be, isn't it kind of weird that the Warriors aren't out there like, no, we really want this guy back?
Their owner literally went on a podcast and said, no, we really want this guy back. We're doing everything we can to bring him back. He's family.
But
I don't know how much further you can go.
All right, fine. So I guess I shouldn't play devil's advocate.
No, not with that angle, at least.
But, well, the thing is, though, like, this Clippers thing, Ramona Shelburne said it was real.
Yeah.
Jerry West is out there saying, like,
Cal State Fullerton great Mark Stein reported it. If he reports it, I believe it.
I'll completely cop to moving the field goal post here a second.
That's fine.
But because I have to.
Yeah.
But for somebody whose owner says he's quote unquote family and that we're gonna do everything we can to keep him, Jerry West is out there publicly saying, no, I'd rather be with the Lakers right now. Even though his team
that's not a direct quote, but it was very heavily implied that he would have liked to finish his career with the Lakers, which is understandable. His son works for the organization. He still lives in LA.
Mm-hmm. Well, right. But it goes back to, again, I don't think this guy is as great to, like, hypothetical. If one of us was a great podcaster, and neither of us are, right? But if one of us was the look that Harrison just gave me. But if one of us was a tremendous podcaster and, like, let's say Bill Simmons says, you know what, I want Anthony's job. I want to be your new co-host. I have this model of listening to all these things. But behind the scenes, he was awful to deal with. I'm not saying that that's the case with Bill Simmons. But
I just made up a hypothetical good podcaster instead of just slandering Bill Simmons for no reason.
but like, if that was the case, though, and there were results that were tied to this person being in-house, right, would you necessarily, like, how hard would you think about bringing him on if you knew you were getting yourself into, this guy is pretty bad to deal with, as bad to deal with as we kind of sort of know him to be?
Number one, you're making the false implication that you're easy to deal with. And number two, I think it's a different, context with the Lakers. Mm-hmm. They're successful already. They're set either way. Mm-hmm. And for me, you know, like, I'm not. And so.
Okay. All right. So that was a bad hypothetical.
That backfired.
Yeah. Jeez, sorry. You're not helping me
at
all.
You threatened
Spock.
To fire me during every single ZipRecruiter live read.
Speaking of being threatened to fire, the Lakers benched Timofey Mozgov, and he was not—he was not happy about
that.
It
was our least smooth, but attempt at a smooth segue we've mm-hmm. ever done. Like, speaking of this thing that has nothing related to the second part of this mm-hmm. sentence, Timofey Mozgov.
You know what would have made it a lot smoother?
Huh?
If you didn't just say that.
It was not smooth. I had to call you out for it. You thought you were smooth. It wasn't. Oh, it wouldn't be this podcast if we didn't make fun of each other. But
so,
Timofey Mozgov in an interview with a European basketball site, I think it was Euro Hoops, yeah. He basically said that he was not consulted on the decision to bench him, but basically that if they wanted to bench him, then he was fine. If they didn't want him to play, he didn't want to play anyway. So Timofey Mozgov was that kid who would take his ball and go home growing up.
Here's the quote exactly. The coach told me about it before the game.
Well, it's translated, so it's not exactly.
Okay. The coach told me before the game, it was a big surprise for me. Honestly, it was a surprise. It was a surprise to everyone, even Coach Walton, which maybe there's something lost in translation there because those two points kind of go against each other.
He's saying that go ahead. I still don't understand what motivated the management to make such a decision. I did not try to find out the details. They don't want to put me in, so I don't want to also.
Okay, so...
I think what he's saying is that it was a management decision.
Well, no, he's saying
saying it was a surprise. Even Coach Walton, I still don't understand what motivated the management to make such a decision. This has been teaching Anthony how to...
But the coach told me.
Yeah, well, so management told the coach to bench him. Management wouldn't come down and do that.
Pretty close to management in this situation.
But he's saying that it was a surprise to Walton.
Okay. I don't quite believe that. I'll say that. I don't quite believe that...
Anthony calling Luke Walton a liar right on air. Okay. All right.
Well, I think...
only one of us did that. It wasn't me.
Look, Timo's a huge, intimidating guy. Like, if you had to break the news to him that you were benching him, wouldn't you?
Oh, there's not enough money.
I don't know what's going on, man. I'm not... To be absolutely clear, this was not my decision. I don't know what's going on up there, but I'm telling you, it's not my decision. Meanwhile, you know... I think Luke might have had an idea. I mean, everybody knew as the season was going along that the Lakers' priorities were
I think that when you're in the building, though, it's a little bit different. I think it's easy to prognosticate that stuff from outside. But for Luke Walton, Timofey Mozgov is a veteran. He knows that he can count on him to not make mistakes due to lack of, like, thinking. Rather than, I mean, of course he's going to mess up when he lacks the talent to complete something, but it's not going to be because he didn't understand what he was supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And so for a coach, that is a security blanket.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. So I think if things were up to him, I don't think he would have benched Mozgov. I totally buy that. So what incentive does he have to make his defense even worse?
You'd rather, I mean, if a mistake is getting made either way, right? Because... Mozgov doesn't have the physical ability that somebody like Tarik Black does, or on offense Zubats has. I don't think he has the physical ability, so he's going to make those mistakes anyway. And then you have, on the other side of it, Mozgov won't make mistakes because he's been around the league long enough to not make mental mistakes. Like, if you're a coach, a mistake is going to get made anyway. I'd rather teach my kids who have a higher ceiling. Because it's not like Mozgov is getting that physical ability back. Those guys have a better opportunity, better chance at developing the mental ability in the game.
I don't think most coaches think that long term. They're thinking that night who is more likely to come through for me most often. I think he knew that was Mozgov. Lakers fans don't want to hear that because I've been as much on the Zubats bandwagon as anyone. And I think he's going to be really good. But he definitely made more mistakes than Mozgov did.
But if there is a coach who has the long-term...
They don't think about the upside. They think about the floor.
Well, right. But if there is a coach who has the ability to think long-term, it would be...
Theoretically, it would be Luke.
It would be Luke.
I'm not saying that he doesn't ever think long-term or things like that, or that he doesn't understand why these decisions are being made. I just don't think that... I would not be surprised if it wasn't his decision. And Mozgov implying that, I buy it.
Yeah, I don't. It's not like I think that both of those guys are, either of those guys are just flat-faced liars. I think that there's a little bit of gray area here where I think Walton was in on this thing, kind of tried to soften it to Mozgov. Mozgov didn't deal with it well. And you can see now, we're now months removed, and he's still, that quote doesn't come off to me as somebody who's thrilled about it. Well,
he was obviously asked about it. I highly doubt he called up some reporter and said...
No, I know, but like even then, though, like even if
he's an honest guy. If you ask Mozgov about anything, he'll give you his opinion. He doesn't sugarcoat things.
Yeah, he's terrifying.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to ask him like anything.
I've done interviews with him. He's a really nice guy. He's also just brutally honest. If you ask him something, he will evaluate that thing.
We need to show him my Eurostep.
Yeah, you will probably cry. Worst move I have ever seen.
You should not talk.
Worse than Huertas.
We need to take down the sign saying, like, days since Huertas joke.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Whoops. There it went. Our bad. Sorry, Catalyst.
So, all right. Do you think, though, him being so honest is good for the Lakers? Because I think that's a fair question to wonder about.
Yeah, I think it's fine. I don't really... I mean, I guess I'm biased because I like it when guys are honest when you interview them. But I don't... He's not the type of guy that's going to be honest and, like, blast the Lakers. I don't think this is blasting them. I think that this is him being a prideful player. Mm-hmm. And I think that I think Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka would probably understand him having this stance.
Especially Magic.
Yeah.
You know, having been a player.
Yeah.
And Luke, having Magic...
Luke, I'm sure, understands it as much as anyone, because later in his career, he was a veteran getting benched for younger guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Magic never had to deal with that, because, one, he was Magic Johnson. Magic
that was never a problem for Magic Johnson.
And well, one, because of that, and then two, because his career ended so abruptly.
Yeah.
But
even on his comebacks and stuff, like, that was never going to happen.
Yeah.
Or we don't acknowledge those, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a weird thing. Actually, it was somebody on Twitter, I forget who it was, saying that, like, Magic could have stuck around and been, like, a small ball four.
He kind of was.
Had he stuck around when Shaq was there? Like, that would have been fun.
Oh, man, that's a cool hypothetical.
That is fun, right? I'll play devil's advocate here. I think for Mozgov, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt here because he's speaking his second language, translated.
Yeah, it's being translated.
So I think that's worth pointing out. But I think, like, his comments about Zubats, while they were true, becoming a starting center amidst an NBA season is not the same thing as starting an NBA season as the starting center. Those are two different things.
Interviews when he said Zubats wasn't ready to be the full-time starter.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think, again, I think, like you said, he's brutally honest, and I think he's right there. I agree with what he's saying. But if I was...
Well, being a starting center and being a starting center on the Lakers are two different things. Or being a starting center on a developing team are two different things. Mm-hmm. Like, is he ready to be a starting center on a good team? No, but most of these young guys aren't ready to start on a good team. They wouldn't be starting on a good team. Mm-hmm. But they are starting on this team because they are the future of this team.
Right. So I think what he said there was true, but I don't know if I was Zubats that I'd want to hear it.
No, of course not. I think both things can be true.
Yeah, and I think in this case here...
I'm telling you, that's going to be a battle of the Titans during training
camp. Dude, that's going to be fun.
Like, literal Titans.
Because yeah. Zubats has no back down in him either.
No.
You know? So that's going to be... that.
Zubats went after D-League refs after a game one time. he does not let this stuff go. He told me that he was not thrilled with the officiating. He did not literally follow D-League refs. But, like, he doesn't hide it when he's not pleased about something. And he has competitive... He jokes around, but he's, like, a fiery competitor.
Yeah. And so that's going to be fun to watch. But I think if I was Zubats and I keep hearing these quotes... Like, I'm putting that in my back pocket, and I'm getting ready for what will be a very eventful training camp, I would think. And if I'm the Lakers, I don't know, like, you want competition, but you want it to be productive. You don't want it to get ugly.
I don't think it's going to get ugly. I think they're just competitors.
I'm saying if these quotes keep happening, if I was the Lakers, I'd say at some point, hey, team up, like, we're sorry we benched you. We're sorry we sucked. Like, blame us for sucking.
Sorry for paying you $64 million.
Yeah. Like, that's the other thing, is that, like, this guy is making
that
so much money.
That does on some level make it worse, though. It's more embarrassing.
Yeah, so, like, this guy is making so much money, and so many people want him just gone. And I think that might be painting some of my analysis here, too.
Yeah.
Is that, like, I already don't like this guy for being paid so much money.
It's not his fault that the Lakers offered him $64 million 1 minute into free agency.
Who said fandom is
yeah, that's fair.
But I think for... it's Spock over here. But with Timo, I think you're getting paid as much as you're getting paid. At least, like, Walton met with him before the game to tell him, hey, you're being benched. Whereas, like, when the last coach benched D'Angelo Russell and Julius Randle, it was like, well, you're not playing tonight, and then there was like no conversation after.
No. He just announced it in the media, and then they were told.
Right.
I'm pretty sure if I remember correctly, they were told by the media when they were asked about it.
So I think the Lakers, I think to the Lakers' credit, I think they handled it. Maybe they could have handled it a little bit better, but I think no matter what, Mozgov was going to react poorly to being benched no matter what, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think when it comes to moving forward here, if I was the Lakers, I would kind of say like, man, like just cool it just a little bit. Like just maybe pump the brakes a little bit next time before you kind of put these quotes out there. Because look at this graphic that we have.
Just answer.
Look at that graphic.
Yeah.
That is not a happy, like right now we're looking at what we're putting out there on
Instagram.
On Instagram. And again, it's, they don't want to put me in, so I don't want to also. Like that doesn't sound like somebody who is thrilled with the organization who's paying him way too much damn money.
Yeah, I mean, I still am stuck on the fact that I just said it's not Timofey Mozgov's fault the Lakers paid him $64 million.
Yeah.
He can't control that. It's not his fault. Don't get mad.
Just the idea of him
being on the other end of the phone. They forced it on him.
Are you sure? Let me negotiate this down for you.
Yeah.
No, we're going up.
That was Rob Pelinka in our minds when the Lakers offered Kobe $50 million a year.
Yeah.
On that last extension.
Mitch is on one.
That's our imaginary Rob Pelinka. It's just like no, wait.
Timo. So I know we agreed on 4 years, $48 million. But F it, we're going 64.
Are you sure, Mitch? Are you his agent? And I'm not going to try an offensive Russian accent because that wouldn't go very well. Are you sure? 48 was perfectly fine.
No. We have money to spend. If it doesn't get spent, I don't even know what happens to it.
All right, fine, I guess. But this probably isn't going to help my client in the eyes of the fans.
Do you want more?
So, I don't know. We'll see how this all plays out, but
this show just jumped the shark.
It may be.
Like, as a show, not just this episode. I mean, like, our show just jumped the shark.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Fonzie. So, you know that's where that comes from. All right.
Happy days.
All right. So, that I guess, does it after we've officially jumped a great white shark. I think in regards to Mozgov and Zubats, it's going to be a really fun competition to watch, but I would like to see if this I would hope is the last time this comes up.
When Zubats averages 40 and 20 during summer league, I think everybody's going to be quiet about it from then on.
Yeah. All right. So that does it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast.
Long episode, much longer than we meant for it to go. But you guys deserve a little bonus. If you didn't like this show, I'm sorry.
We had two shows this week because of the short week and the long holiday last weekend. So we'll send everybody off into the weekend here with a little bit more. As always, follow the show on Audio Boom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Today's Fast Break. Today's show is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/LOLakers to try it for free. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/LOLakers. I'll be on there in a bit to see if I can find another less Spockian co-host. Talk to you later. I wish you would have done like...
I'm not signing off when you talk to me like that.
I wish you would have done like, you know, whatever he says. May the force be with you.
Live long and prosper.
Yeah, that one.